Thanks, everybody, and welcome to the 20th In Conversation series. Since the last time we spoke, we at Montefiore and Einstein have lost one of our giants in cardiology in my field. Dr. Jim Scheuer passed away since our last conversation. I just wanted to recognize Jim, who I didn't have the great fortune of training under directly, but knew him from the cardiology world. He was truly a giant in not only clinical cardiology, but in research in cardiovascular disease and our understanding of how the heart works as a muscle. So my thoughts go out to Jim's family, and it's a great loss for us at Montefiore and Einstein. So as we move on, we're still focused on the COVID-19 pandemic, and indeed it's kind of affected everything that we do. So predictably, we'll discuss how the pandemic has altered other activities at the college and in the health system. And we'll talk about cancer in particular today with Dr. Ed Chu, and I'll come back to Ed in just a minute. But I'd like to first give a local update. As I mentioned, COVID-19 is still with us. Fortunately, it's leveled off and is in fact slowly decreasing, with about 550 patients hospitalized in our health system with COVID-19. About a third of our intensive care unit beds are occupied by people with the disease. The percent positive tests in the state have decreased from just over 10% in early January to about 4% or so, and from about 7.5% to 5% in New York City. Roughly, we're at about 7% in the Bronx. Hospitalizations are certainly a lagging indicator, but they peaked in early February and are significantly decreasing over the past 2 weeks in both the city and in the borough. Interestingly, and fortunately, the mortality rate's lower, much lower than it was in the early spring. And that's in our health system anyway. So we are better equipped and better understand how to treat this disease. We continue to vaccinate, have administered over 50,000 doses of vaccine. We still have a ways to go, with only about 5% of the adult population in the Bronx having been vaccinated. And about 6% of that group has gotten a single dose and is waiting for their second dose. Statewide, the numbers are just about 1.5 million people, about 7% of the population. Some of this is a supply problem, but there is certainly a component that is involves vaccine hesitancy. One of the things the pandemic has impacted is the care of chronic disease. And this is particularly a challenge in our community, where the burden of chronic illness, particularly those that increase susceptibility to COVID-19 and bad outcomes from COVID-19, specifically diabetes, coronary artery disease, obesity, and cancer, are so prevalent. So it's natural for us to talk about at least one of those spaces today. And it's really my pleasure to introduce the new director of the Einstein Montefiore Cancer Center, Dr. Edward Chu. Ed is the Carolyn Roger Einiger Professor of Cancer Medicine, Professor of Medicine and Oncology, and the Professor of Molecular Pharmacology at Einstein. He's also serving as the Vice President for Cancer Medicine in Montefiore Medicine. We'll have Dr. Chu kind of introduce himself and give a little bit of background and speak about how the pandemic has affected cancer medicine in general, and specifically at Einstein and Montefiore. So Ed, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Gordon, so much for having me join you and the whole group. And also, let me just take this opportunity to thank you for all of your tremendous support of the Cancer Center. Maybe just by way of quick introduction. So I'm a medical oncologist by training, and kind of the area that I've worked on really for the past 30 years has been in the area of cancer therapeutics and cancer drug development, starting with my early days at the National Cancer Institute, then going on to Yale, and then 10 years the preceding 10 years before coming to Einstein, I was at the University of Pittsburgh in the UPMC Hillman Cancer Center. And as Gordon said, I actually was appointed by Dean Tomaselli and Dr. Oswa to be the new cancer center director for the Albert Einstein Cancer Center. And I started here in October. So it's now, I guess, 5 months into my tenure as the director. And so far, so good. Everyone's been really terrific, extraordinarily gracious. And I have to say, it's actually been fun to be, you know, part of, I think, the new growth of the Cancer Center. Interestingly, I had actually served as a member of the External Advisory Board for the Albert Einstein Cancer Center for the past 14 years. I actually knew my predecessor, Dr. David Goldman, who really had done a tremendous job as the director. And so I had a pretty good sense of what was going on at the Cancer Center. And I think what always had impressed me was really the tremendous basic science on the Einstein campus, especially as it relates to the cancer investigators. And I have to say, you know, as I now have been, you know, meeting folks and hearing more about what's going on, I've been even more impressed at how amazing the science on the Einstein campus has been. I think one of the I would say weaknesses in the past relating to the Cancer Center was that there was probably not as tight a linkage with the clinical care, healthcare delivery, community outreach engagement piece on the Montefiore side. And so one of, I think, the unique aspects of my role as Cancer Center Director and also having a leadership position at Montefiore Medicine as Vice President of Cancer Medicine is now to bring under the umbrella of the Cancer Center not only the academic research that's going on our Einstein campus, but to really tightly link that piece with the clinical care, healthcare delivery piece that's going on at Montefiore. And I think, you know, we certainly owe a tremendous amount of credit to Dean Tomaselli and Dr. Oswa for, I think, having that vision of bringing those two worlds together, so that really together, you know, as an integrated unit, we could really move the tremendous science and discoveries Einstein into to patients and hopefully to the community. So that's just kind of, I guess, just a quick snapshot of, I guess, kind of where we are with the Cancer Center. And as it relates to COVID, you know, not surprisingly, the clinical side, especially the clinical side relating to cancer patients, you know, during the height of the pandemic last year, really impacted in a very significant way on the cancer care. But I have to say, just like with all of Montefiore and Einstein really taking a tremendous leadership role in ensuring, you know, the high quality care of our patients, I think the same could be said actually for the clinical care of our cancer patients. And so it's interesting that the oncology leadership and the leadership of the oncology service line, they actually took what's called a PPE approach to the care of our cancer patients. And the PPE actually has nothing to do with personal protective equipment. It actually has to do with prevent, protect, and enable, although as part of the protection, it was obviously to make sure that the personal protective equipment was in place. So the PPE, the prevent, protect, enable, prevent was to really try to reduce the risk of our cancer patients to the possibility of being infected with COVID-19. And so, as you might imagine, a lot of the normal routine visits that would typically happen with cancer patients was kind of placed on hold. And this has to do with in-person visits. And what happened was almost 75% of the patients who would normally be seen in routine follow-up in our outpatient clinics were actually now being seen through telehealth, through the same mechanism as we're doing now, through Zoom meetings. And I think up to 75-80% of the follow-up visits were done via telehealth. I can say at the same time, even though in Pittsburgh, we weren't impacted to the same degree as was the case here at Montefiore Einstein, we also pretty much shifted all of our routine follow-up visits to telehealth. And it's interesting, I think, you know, one can do pretty efficient, effective follow-up visits. I think one of the challenges we learned, and I suspect probably the challenges that was also learned here was, and especially relating to the Bronx community, that one just has to make sure that the patients, you know, have the appropriate access to Wi-Fi and to Zoom. And also we found that the older patients actually had some challenges with the Zoom mechanism. I have to say, yours truly also early on had some difficulties in making sure that I could make the Zoom, or back in Pittsburgh, we use Teams meeting as our approach. But one was really to shift towards telehealth, you know, to reduce the in-person visits. And then also in terms of screening early detection strategies, that was pretty much eliminated. And any kind of elective procedures, either diagnostic procedures or surgical procedures, were really placed on hold until the infection was under better control. Obviously, that now has changed, as I think we now have much better understanding of how to deal with the infection, how to protect our patients. And also, I think, recognize that we still need to continue to screen our patients. So, for example, and perhaps not surprisingly, because we were not doing as much screening methodologies as one normally would, say, for instance, for breast cancer and colon cancer, over the last 4 or 5 months, we've actually seen more patients present with advanced disease. Because again, you know, patients were not allowed to come in for their screening tests. They were reluctant to come in, and then unfortunately allowed the disease to go to a more advanced stage. So I think we do recognize that, especially for patients who are at increased risk for developing breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, we really still need to be very vigilant about the screening and early detection strategies. You know, protect actually, so it was also clear that for patients who require treatment, that we really could not hold on their treatments. We did actually try to, I think, modify the treatment strategy. So instead of prolonged infusions, maybe think about using oral chemotherapies, oral systemic therapies. Try to reduce the time that patients had to come into the clinic. But if they did have to come into the outpatient clinic, then we obviously made sure that, you know, the real PPE, personal protective equipment, social distancing, you know, minimizing the number of accompanying visitors and caregivers. Also to try to stagger patients so that really we could really reduce the physical crowding, really very, very important. And then, you know, enable, for sure, you know, we still needed to continue with the clinical care of our cancer patients, and also to continue with the tremendous research that was going on the Einstein and Montefiore campus. And what's interesting is that a number of our cancer center scientists, investigators, actually also began to think of strategies to battle and target the COVID-19 virus. So in fact, there were some investigators from our Department of Biochemistry, such as Drs. Vern Schramm and Evris Gavathiotis, who actually have been trying to develop novel molecules that inhibit either the kind of the active moiety of the COVID virus, or to inhibit enzymes that are critical for the growth and replication of the COVID virus. And in fact, one of the molecules that Dr. Schramm initially had developed for a parasitic disease actually was found to be very active in vitro, in vivo, in preclinical laboratory studies against the COVID-19 virus. And in fact, phase one studies are currently being conducted in Brazil to see if in fact there is activity. And I'm told there actually does seem to be some interesting activity. Dr. Almo, who is an expert in developing novel biologics, actually turned part of his laboratory into trying to identify T cells that are specifically targeting the COVID-19 virus, and to actually make them more potent killers, if you will, of the COVID-19 virus. There are also some other investigators who are trying to develop some novel techniques, methodologies to look at the virus in the exhaled breath. So Dr. Simon Spivak, who's been using kind of exhaled breath detection methods for lung cancer, actually now is also trying to develop similar methodologies to detect the COVID virus. For any of you who've had the nasopharyngeal swab, it's not the most pleasant thing to have that swab kind of stuck up your nasal passages. It's pretty intense. I've actually had it three times, and none of them have been all that pleasant. And then we also have investigators who are looking at patients in the Bronx and investigating the psychosocial stresses that have gone with our cancer patients who are concerned about COVID-19. And then Dr. Allison Modell, who's developed this phenomenal Bull Buddy program, is trying to use her cancer navigators and telehealth to see if she can reduce the psychosocial burden. So there really has been a tremendous amount of research now focusing on COVID-19 in addition to cancer research. And even though we had to also modify, you know, the number of personnel within the labs and had to kind of stagger the times and do shifts, just we recently took a look at the funding of our investigators. And just within the last year, in terms of grants funding from the National Cancer Institute, we've seen about a $4 or $5 million increase. And in other NIH cancer relevant funding, we've seen an increase by up to $6 to $7 million. So it goes to show you, maybe in part our investigators had a little bit more time to spend at home and to be more thoughtful in writing their grant applications, but they've been very, very successful even during the pandemic. And I would just say just two other things, maybe before opening up to questions. Because again, Montefiore really was at the heart of the pandemic last spring. Our clinical groups actually published the largest reports in the United States on the experience of our cancer patients with COVID-19. And it is clear that our cancer patients who are infected with COVID-19 have a higher mortality rate. In fact, it goes up to close to 30%. Interestingly, there are particular types of cancer patients who are especially increased risk for death, and that has to do with patients who have blood tumors, hematologic malignancies, such as leukemias, lymphomas, and patients who have undergone stem cell transplant. And for solid tumors, the one disease where one has to be particularly concerned is lung cancer. And that may not be surprising because, as we know, you know, COVID-19, when it goes into the lungs and causes pneumonia, can be very, very significant. And obviously patients with lung cancer, their lung airways are already compromised. And the other important, so obviously that was a very important piece that was published in Cancer Discovery. And then in follow-up, the same group of our oncologists published a very interesting report looking at patients who had been infected with COVID-19 and seroconversion, meaning that they had antibodies present. And the good news is, so what the concern is that cancer patients being immunocompromised might not be able to mount an effective antibody response. In fact, 92% of the 250 patients who were investigated actually were able to mount a very robust antibody response. However, there were two types of patients who were able to mount a response, but it was only about 60%. And those were patients with blood tumors, and in particular, patients with blood tumors who were being treated with certain antibody treatments that were actually depleting some of the antibodies, and also patients who were undergoing stem cell therapies or CAR T cell therapy. But I think the good news is that cancer patients can mount a response, which I think then emphasizes the point that our cancer patients who are at increased risk for developing COVID infection and increased side effects really should be vaccinated. And as the dean has said, there is hesitancy in our Bronx patient population, which makes, you know, 80% of our population, 85% maybe, is, you know, African-American patients from actually the west part of Africa, Hispanics. And there is a hesitancy and a reluctance on those patients to be vaccinated. In fact, up to 40% of the nurses in our oncology clinics have expressed reservations and hesitancy about getting vaccinated. So it really is a very, very important issue. And we're actually working with folks in the Office of Community and Population Health at Montefiore to try to better educate both patients as well as some of our frontline providers. So I think maybe I'll just stop there if that's okay, Gordon.
Yeah, that's okay. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Ed, yeah. Thanks so much for a terrific presentation. Perhaps a couple of questions to expand upon a little bit. So are there any particular cautions in specific cancer patients that should be taken to, number one, avoid infection, or number two, there have been a number of specific therapies, convalescent plasma, some antibodies, and other drugs, remdesivir and others. Are there any specific therapies that would be somewhat concerning in cancer patients, or should they be treated like patients who don't have cancer and have COVID-19?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question, Gordon. I think that the simple answer is that they should be treated just like other patients. And it is interesting that our oncology service line, working with the infectious disease experts, you know, have set up, you know, a clinic, an infusion clinic, where patients can receive either the monoclonal antibody, and I think the one they're using is the monoclonal antibody from Lilly, as well as convalescent plasma. And actually, I was just meeting with the infectious disease people a couple of days ago. And actually quite a number of cancer patients, in fact, have been treated. And it looks like the success rate is about the same as non-cancer patients. So I think it's clear that our cancer patients can benefit from the same type of treatments. I think it's clear that just like with other patients, our cancer patients, you know, need to, you know, wear masks when they go out, when they come to the clinics. I think one might suggest maybe double masking might be an even better way to prevent from being infected. Obviously, to, you know, wash their hands, to use hand sanitizer, and to really avoid crowds and avoid social physical distancing. So I think basically the same precautions that we're not taking with everyone should hold for our cancer patients.
And is that true for vaccination as well? Are there any patients who maybe should not be vaccinated, or do any of the vaccine platforms behave differently in cancer patients versus patients without cancer?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we don't really know the answer. It hasn't really been that well studied, but I think the feeling is that certainly our cancer patients, especially those who have completed their treatments and who are, you know, undergoing routine follow-up, they should clearly be vaccinated. I think it's a little bit trickier in patients who are undergoing active treatments, especially those who are undergoing, you know, stem cell transplant therapies, or therapies that would result in significant myelosuppression, such as with chemotherapy. And so, in fact, Memorial Sloan Kettering has actually put out some guidelines as to when the appropriate timing might be if there's a patient undergoing active treatment. Now, an interesting aspect is that in patients who are receiving some of these newer immunotherapies, such as the immune checkpoint therapies, they actually seem to have the same high level of seroconversion and response as non-cancer patients or cancer patients who are not undergoing treatment. And so it's interesting. So just as these immunotherapies are trying to unleash the immune system on the tumors themselves, it seems that perhaps also they're also activating the immune system throughout the body. So it may be almost a booster, if you will, right? An internal booster to vaccination. So I think for cancer patients who are on the newer immunotherapies, they can probably get the vaccinations at the same time they're getting their immunotherapies.
Terrific. So very important for patients and families to consult with their oncologists when considering all these things.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
I guess one other thing is, we've heard a lot about certain long haul, if you will, complications of COVID-19 infection in various populations. Does this seem to be any more or any less prevalent in cancer patients?
Again, you know, we don't really know the answer to that. And in fact, I've been talking to, you know, my oncology colleagues who, you know, have published, you know, the Montefiore-Einstein experience with cancer patients. So I think it'll be interesting now we're 1 year later to see kind of, are there any long-lasting sequelae, you know, now 1 year later, and then to continue to follow up, you know, probably sometime next year. I think certainly, you know, we're hearing a lot. Just recently in the news, there was this young boy, I think from Texas, who has been experiencing some long-term sequelae. And I know Dr. Fauci and the folks at the NIAID, in fact, have, they've started a project looking at some of these patients who are experiencing these you know, long-term sequelae, either in the lungs, the heart, or in the brain. And I think, you know, because we have probably the country's most extensive experience with cancer patients in COVID, we'll be able to contribute to that knowledge base. But I think right now it's just still too early to know for sure.
Great. And I would assume the same is true for childhood cancers and the sequelae consequences and treatment. That's even probably a fewer number of patients, but one that we'll have to kind of follow for a longer period of time to get some answers.
Yep, absolutely.
Good. Well, that's terrific. So Ed, I want to thank you. We're at the half hour. I want to thank you so much for agreeing to speak to us today. This has been really informative, I think. And I want to thank the audience for participating in our 20th In Conversation series. And we will continue these because although we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, we are not at the end of the tunnel yet. And we'll continue to talk about COVID and its implications for our patients and our population. So again, thank you everybody for joining us and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Gordon. Yeah, thanks everyone for your attention and yeah, have a great weekend.